You're there in Isaiah chapter 47, and we are continuing our study through the book of Isaiah. And this is really a continuation of chapter 46, where we're dealing with Bel being bowing down. And we know that Bel was the god of the Babylonians. But we see here very clearly that we're talking about Babylon. So in verse 1 here, I just want to read a few verses here to just get started into the study. It says, "Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground, there is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called tender and delicate. Take the millstones and grind meal. Uncover thy locks, make bare the leg, uncover the thigh, pass over the rivers. Thy nakedness shall be uncovered, yea, thy shame shall be seen. I will take vengeance, and I will not meet thee as a man." So we see here that we're going to be getting into the judgment of Babylon. In particular, we're dealing with the physical Babylon that was going to be destroyed, you know, when Belshazzar was king, and after they had taken captive Judah and all that, okay? But we definitely see how this is going to, there's also a lot that's applying to the Babylon in the future, okay? So you always see that parallel on stuff that's going on there. But the first thing that I see here is that, you know, we see that it you may have seen this kind of terminology used, but actually used with Zion, okay, the virgin daughter of Zion, right? And you see, and you're like, what in the world? Why does it say that? Well, I think in this passage, when it's talking about Babylon, I think it gives us this information as far as why is it saying it like that? Why is it saying it's the virgin daughter of Babylon? I think it kind of defines itself late, right after it says, "There is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called tender and delicate." Okay, so what you have to understand is that he's likening this nation or even the city that he's going to destroy to a virgin daughter that's delicate, that's tender. And then he's going to be talking about how your nakedness is going to be shown. You're going to be defiled is essentially what's going to happen. Okay, and he's likening it unto, you know, you had a virgin daughter that's being defiled. Okay, and that's what this nation. So obviously, when you're talking about uncovering the locks, make bare the leg, uncover the thigh, we know that the thigh is nakedness. Okay, the Bible talks about that the priests were to wear linen breeches or linen breeches, which means it's a garment that has a breech in it. But it would go from the loin to the thighs. Okay, so to the knee would be the thighs, and then your knee down to your foot would be the leg. Okay. And so obviously to get to the thighs, you'd be uncovering the leg, right? So it's basically saying, you know, uncovering the leg, uncovering the thigh, thy nakedness shall be uncovered, yea, thy shame shall be seen, okay? So it's likening this nation saying, basically, I'm going to make you naked and ashamed, okay? So obviously the nation itself isn't like a woman that's like got a dress on, okay? But he's just giving this example. And you know, other places talk about the virgin daughter of Zion. Well, Zion was taken out, right? And so you can see how that would be likened unto the virgin daughter of Zion and how it was defiled, right? And ultimately, all of Jerusalem was completely destroyed. The temple was burned down. The city was burned. The gates were destroyed. The wall was destroyed. Everything was destroyed. But then this chapter is getting into the fact that they went too far, right? Babylon went too far, and now Babylon's being punished. Okay, and it's interesting because we're not even to the point where, you know, Judah was even taken captive. We know all this stuff actually happened, okay, because it's in the past. We have Jeremiah. We have, you know, the fact that even history, you know, will tell you that Babylon was completely destroyed. But I want to first get into the idea of, you know, why is he talking about nakedness and being ashamed? Because that's what it really comes down to is nakedness is a shame. Now, go to Genesis chapter 2, first of all, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 25, and nakedness wasn't always a shame, meaning that when God created man on the earth, they were naked. Man and woman were naked, and they were not ashamed, okay? And it's very clear about that in Genesis 2 and verse 25, before we had the fall of man, before sin came into the world. Notice what it says in verse 25. Now, this is after Adam and Eve, you know, basically it says you leave father and mother and cleave unto your wife. It says, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Okay, so there was no shame associated with nakedness before the fall of man. And this really gets into innocency, right? Because they didn't have the knowledge of good and evil, okay? So it wasn't until they ate the fruit in chapter 3, you go to chapter 3 and verse 7, that their eyes were opened and they realized they were naked. Okay, verse 7 there says, and the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. Go down to verse 9, and the Lord God called unto Adam and said unto him, where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. Verse 21, it says, unto Adam also and to his wife did the Lord God make coats of skin and clothed them. Okay, so the idea here is that you need clothes to cover your nakedness, and the nakedness is shame. Okay, now this is a great passage, obviously, to understand why, you know, when children are coming to the knowledge of good and evil, because children will know that they're naked. Okay, as far as like you could have a 2-year-old that knows like I'm naked, right? They realize that they're naked. Okay, but knowing shame because of that, or like understanding what that means, you know, is a different story. Okay, as far as when your child would be afraid to run around here naked, okay, in front of everybody, and there's plenty of kids that have no problem doing that. They don't think twice about it, right? And you're like trying to catch them, and they're like throwing their clothes off and all this stuff, right? But they get to a certain age, and you know, like a 10-year-old is not just going to take their clothes off and just start running around, you know, stark naked around the church building, right? That'd be crazy, and obviously they'd get in a lot of trouble for that. When you're dealing with like toddlers and stuff like that, yes, it's embarrassing for your parents, you know, to be like, I got to get my children who's running around stark naked. But at the same time, like the child isn't feeling that shame. The child doesn't know, you know, they don't have that knowledge of good and evil, if you will. Okay, they know they're naked. Okay, it's not that they don't realize they don't have clothes on, okay? But the knowledge of understanding that that's, you know, that there should be any shame associated with that, okay? And that's what this chapter, you know, it starts off basically stating is that I'm going to make you naked. I'm going to make the land naked. And, you know, everybody's going to see your shame, okay? Because if you think about Babylon, the big thing with Babylon is the fact that it's, like, basically clothed with scarlet and, like, all these, like, precious jewels, and it's like pretty much a woman that has all this attire on, right? And obviously we know that Babylon's the mother of harlots and all this stuff, you know. And the idea though is the fact that God's basically saying, I'm gonna take all that off, and they're gonna see your shame. You know, you're just gonna be stark naked in front of the world. Okay. And that's what he's gonna do to the nation. Okay, as far as destroying it, destroying the land, destroying the cities, burning it down, you know, destroying the people, like all of that is going to be shown that it's going to be shameful, meaning that they don't really have any power. And if you think about it, you're at your most vulnerable state when you're naked, okay? The thing is, I hate horror movies, okay? Like, I can't stand them. And some of you are like, I love horror movies, and I'm not against you. I'm not saying, like, you know, there's something wrong with you, because my younger brother liked horror movies for some reason. I just never liked them. I don't like watching people get brutally murdered and stuff like that. But I know it's fake, okay? I know that you can detach that. But when I watch a movie, I'm, like, involved. Like, I'm, like, putting myself, you know, like, I'm Mr. Darcy, you know? I'm Mr. Knightley, you know? No, but anyway, if you don't know who that is, don't worry about it. Don't look it up either. No, I'm just kidding. But all that to say is that... what was I going to get with horror movies? Yeah, what I was going to get with the horror movies, I like lost my whole train of thought, is that in horror movies, it's always like, you know, people are in their most vulnerable state. They're like, you know, like it's, they're in like some creepy house, and they're like, all right, I'm going to go take a shower, you know, and like get naked. And then like there's this murderer that's in the house and stuff like that, you know. And the idea, though, the whole reason they do that is because they know that your most vulnerable state is when you're like just stark naked, you know, like in the shower, you know, like that's your most vulnerable state. You know, when you're a kid, you know, you're afraid to like, you know, you'd see like some scary movie or something like that, and you're afraid to like close your eyes and like wash your hair because you're afraid like something's gonna come and get you, you know? So if no one had that, I'm so, you know, like everybody's like, you scaredy cat, like what's wrong with you, you know? Did anyone here not want to put their foot on the floor, you know, under from under their bed? No one? No one saw those scary movies? Anyway, I hated those scary movies, right? Anyway, all that to say is that, you know, nakedness, you're vulnerable, and it's this idea of shame. And the idea is what God is getting across here is that, you know, he's going to make them extremely vulnerable and just show that they have no power, okay? And so go back to Isaiah chapter 47 here. And the last thing he says there in verse 43, it says, I will not meet thee as a man. Okay? Now, you say, well, what does he mean by that? Well, the next verse, I believe, kind of shows you what he means by that. It says in verse 4, as for our Redeemer, the Lord of hosts is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Meaning that it's not a man that's going to meet you and take you out. It's going to be God that's going to take you out. Now, obviously, Jesus is God and man. You know, I'm not taking away from that. But he's making a point. He's like, it's not just a man that's meeting you. Okay, I'm not meeting you as just like another man that's coming to meet you. It's not like it's just like some other king that's coming after you. No, the Lord of hosts is coming after you. And so you should be afraid about what's going to happen because of that. Now, the idea, I love this, though, as far as just thinking about the how there's kind of like this little break here where God's talking about, and obviously Isaiah is the prophet that's speaking this, but then it says, as for our Redeemer, the Lord of hosts is his name, the Holy One of Israel. And I just love that, the way it attaches that, because you think of this world, and the world is just constantly, you know, against us, the world is against the Bible. But I just want to say to them, as for our Redeemer, the Lord of hosts is his name. As for our Redeemer, Jesus Christ is his name. And he will come and he will destroy. He will set everything right. He will rule and reign with a rod of iron. And he will have a sharp two-edged sword proceeding out of his mouth that's going to destroy the beast, the false prophet, and all his armies that go with it. And there's going to be recompense. And so, you know, this world wants to come out and, you know, your God's not real, all this. No, our Redeemer is the Lord of hosts. The Lord of hosts is his name, and you will know that one day. You will bow before that one day. Every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall confess before God. And that will come. Now, go to Isaiah 43, because you see something similar here in Isaiah 43, dealing with the destruction of Babylon. So obviously there's other passages in Isaiah dealing with the destruction of Babylon. But in verse 13, so Isaiah 43 and verse 13, it says, yea, before the day was, I am he, and there is none that can deliver out of my hand. I will work, and who shall let it? Thus saith the Lord, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, for your sake I have sent to Babylon and have brought down all their nobles and the Chaldeans, whose cries in the ships, I am the Lord, your Holy One, the Creator of Israel, your King. So you can see why in chapter 47 is saying, as for our Redeemer, the Lord of hosts is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Well, think about what was just said about who was going to destroy Babylon, but their Redeemer and the Holy One of Israel. Okay, so, you know, we'd already gone through that chapter, but in case you forgot about it, obviously, this is leading up into that. Go to Revelation chapter 19. Revelation chapter 19, just dealing with this idea of our Redeemer, our Lord, is the one that's going to destroy Babylon. That's exactly what happens with the Babylon that is yet to come. Okay, or the Babylon that's here now, you know, who knows if we're in that day. You know, maybe we're already living in Babylon, and it's just a matter of time before all that stuff gets set off, right? But in Revelation chapter 19, verse 1, it says, and after these things, I heard a great voice of much people in heaven saying, Alleluia, salvation and glory and honor and power unto the Lord our God. For true and righteous are his judgments, for he hath judged the great whore, which did corrupt the earth with her fornication, and hath avenged the blood of his servants at her hand. And again, they said, Alleluia, and her smoke rose up forever and ever. So this is the finale, obviously, of Babylon being destroyed. And you kind of see that here in Isaiah 47 in the fact that, hey, it's the Lord that's going to do this. And I'm going to get into a little more detail as far as, you know, how he does it in the end times and all that. But go to Isaiah 47, verse 5. Isaiah 47. So we'll be going to Revelation. We'll be going to different places to see this parallel, to see, you know, what is this talking about? Because obviously in the New Testament, you're going to see more information, or even in other minor prophets, you'll see more information that is, you know, giving you an idea of what's being said. Verse 5 here, it says, "Sit thou silent and get thee into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called the Lady of Kingdoms." So you see that phrase, you know, they're called the Lady of Kingdoms. And you think of a lady, you kind of think of like a lord and a lady, right? Because, you know, I think in the UK, right, they still have like, they'll knight people and it'll be like Sir somebody and it'll be Madam such and such, right? Or how do they say that? But you know what I'm saying. It's kind of like an honor or royalty or like a lord, you know, like a lord compared to whatever the woman lord would be like a lady, okay? And so it's basically stating is that she is like a queen or princess or something like that, some kind of high stature over the kingdoms. And it's stating that she shall no more be called the Lady of Kingdoms. Verse 6, it says, "I was wroth with my people. I have polluted mine inheritance and given them into thine hand. Thou didst show them no mercy. Upon the ancient hast thou very heavily laid thy yoke. And thou saidst, I shall be a lady forever. So that thou didst not lay these things to thy heart, neither didst remember the latter end of it." Now, basically what it's stating here is that obviously God used Babylon, used Nebuchadnezzar to destroy Judah and to destroy Jerusalem. And, you know, he used Nebuchadnezzar, he calls him his servant, you know, to do this act. And he's stating that. He's saying, "I was wroth with my people, and I have polluted mine inheritance," but he used Babylon to do that. But he's basically saying, Babylon, you went too far, right? You took it too far, and now you're going to be punished for taking it too far. And this happens more than just in this case. If you read through the Old Testament, you'll kind of see that where God uses a nation to destroy them, and he's like, "Yeah, I was wroth with them for a little bit, you know, like but you went too far," and then he takes it out on that country for going past what God wanted to be done unto them. And then it says, "Thou saidst, I shall be a lady forever." Okay, so basically, this kingdom is stating, "I'm going to be a lady, or I'm going to be a lord. You know, I'm going to be basically in dominion over these kingdoms forever." Right? There's no stopping them. They can't be taken out, right? It's the pride that's going on with this kingdom, right? Now, go to Revelation chapter 17. Revelation chapter 17. And we see in Revelation chapter 17 the great whore. And I just want you to see that she's dealing with the kings of the earth, okay? And you say, well, why is it talking like as a woman? Well, a lot of times in the Bible, nations are usually described as men, like Israel and Edom and stuff like that. But the city, like the capital cities, are usually referred to as women. Okay, I'm not really sure why. Why are ships referred to, you know, and like why are they always named female names, you know, and stuff like that. But at the same time, like Jerusalem's usually referred to as a woman, right? You think of you know, Jerusalem, which now is the mother of us all, right? In just different cases, there's talking about the virgin daughter of Zion, which Zion is Jerusalem. And so the idea of it being a woman, it's talking about that great city, okay? Like the great whore of Babylon is that great city of Babylon, okay? So you have like the capital city. So a lot of these kingdoms had capital cities, okay? You think of Assyria had Nineveh. And, you know, just other nations had their capital, and that was their main area, okay? Because you had the land of the Chaldeans, but then you had Babylon, okay? The city Babylon that was heading over that. You think of the Roman Empire, but you had Rome, okay, was the capital of that in Italy. So Revelation chapter 17, verse 1 here, it says, "And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying, unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So notice that it's likening, these are obviously nations, and when it's saying fornication, it's not talking about like literal fornication, like two unmarried people would do and stuff like that, okay? We're dealing with the idea that they are, you know, doing wickedness together and just having affinity with these other nations and just different things that are going on there. And obviously abominations and wickedness is going on in that, okay? So what they're doing with these nations and how she's interacting with these nations, there's wickedness and lewdness and all kinds of debauchery that's going on there. But keep reading there. It says, So he carried me away in the spirit to the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls and having a gold cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And obviously admiration is just kind of just one, you know, you'd imagine just seeing this and not knowing. Especially if you think about John, who's seeing this, and he's back in, you know, the first century AD, and imagine that he's looking at a Babylon in our day, okay? And imagine the bewilderedness of, like, what in the world? I mean, imagine seeing cars, planes, like all kinds of stuff that he's seeing and just not understanding what in the world is going on, okay? Because you got to understand that this hasn't happened yet. So what he's seeing with this great whore and with this nations and all this stuff. But there's a lot in here when it comes to this. The woman is sitting upon the beast that has seven heads. Okay, the seven heads represent seven kingdoms throughout time. And basically there's this whore or this woman that represents a city that's on seven different mountains. Meaning, and what I believe this is stating is that throughout time this woman has moved from one mountain to another, okay? It's always been on the same beast, right? Because there's seven heads on the same beast. But, you know, that kingdom falls, goes to the next head. That kingdom falls, goes to the next head. But the woman is on that beast all the way down the line, okay? Eventually the woman is going to be completely destroyed because all the heads are going to be destroyed. Just like God talks about how he's going to destroy and he's going to break the heads of Leviathan, okay? And he's going to destroy the serpent of the sea, which is the seven-headed dragon, I believe, that came up out of the sea. And go back to Isaiah chapter 47. Isaiah chapter 47, I just want you to see the interaction that Babylon has with these kingdoms, right? Because it says that she's the lady of kingdoms, the mother of harlots. So she's kind of like the one that's over all this stuff and overseeing it. What is this? You're dealing with a world empire is what you're dealing with, okay? And there's a city that's associated with this world empire, okay? So that's who Babylon is. Babylon is a city that's associated or that basically is the headquarters of a world government. And that city has changed throughout history, and there will be a city that represents that, okay? Now, a city sometimes can mean a country, so if you're dealing with, let's say, America's Babylon, it could just be talking about the city of America, if you will, and that is the hub for everything. But there could be a specific city in America that is targeting, okay? As far as, you know, think of our capital as D.C., but in the end times, it may be New York or something like that. That's like the hub of, you know, you think of the United Nations. Where is the United Nations based out of? New York, okay? You can very well see how that would be the hub to the New World Order and how that would be the city that is basically spoken of, okay? But obviously the whole land would be associated with, it'd be kind of like America is the Chaldeans, the land of the Chaldeans, and then New York is the city of Babylon, you know? Just some thoughts, you know, but either way, it doesn't matter because we're not going to be here when this is going down on Babylon. We're not going to be here in the flesh anyway. We'll be in glorified bodies with Jesus. But go to verse 8 there of Isaiah chapter 47. You can see some similar language here dealing with this woman and what she says. So this Lady of Nations, okay? This is Babylon, obviously, we're talking about. It says in verse 8, therefore hear now this, thou that art given to pleasures, that dwellest carelessly, that sayest in thine heart, I am, and none else beside me. I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children. But these two things shall come to thee in a moment, in one day, the loss of children and widowhood. They shall come upon thee in their perfection for the multitude of thy sorceries and for the great abundance of thine enchantments. For thou hast trusted in thy wickedness. Thou hast said, none seeth me. Thy wisdom and thy knowledge, it hath perverted thee. And thou hast said in thine heart, I am and none else beside me. So I want to break this down as far as just different things I see here. Go to Zephaniah chapter 2. And I kind of want to prove this to you, because I know I've hit on this before when you're dealing with that seven-headed dragon and how you had these seven kingdoms throughout history. Because when John is writing this down, it says five are fallen, one is, and one is yet to come. So he was in the sixth head, you know, he was in that sixth kingdom. The five were already gone. They were already dead, okay? Now, obviously, when you see the dragon, you see seven heads, but in the history of time of where they were at in history, he was on the sixth, okay? Five are fallen, one is, and one is yet to come. That means the one is the sixth one, right? So that was the Roman Empire, okay? No doubt the Roman Empire was in a world power position at that point, okay? They weren't at their peak yet, but they were, you know, they were the world power. And Zephaniah is dealing with Assyria. Okay, I want you to see the similar language that's used when it's talking about Nineveh compared to Babylon. Okay, because what we see in Isaiah 47, keep your finger in Isaiah 47, we see that the woman is called careless, and it says, I am and none else beside me. Do you see that? It says that about Babylon, about this Lady of Nations, right? And chapter 2 of Zephaniah, verse 13, it says, and I will stretch out his hand against the north and destroy Assyria and will make Nineveh a desolation and dry like a wilderness. So who are we talking about? It's very clear we're talking about Nineveh. We're talking about Assyria. It says, but these two things shall come to thee in a moment. I'm sorry. I went up to the wrong thing here. I'm like, man, that is exactly like what it says in Isaiah. Verse 14, sorry. So Zephaniah 2, verse 14, it says, and flocks shall lie down in the midst of her, all the beasts of the nations, both the cormorant and the bittern shall lodge in the upper lintels of it. Their voice shall sing in the windows. Desolation shall be in the thresholds, for he shall uncover the cedar work. This is the rejoicing city that dwelt carelessly, that said in her heart, I am, and there is none beside me. How has she become a desolation, a place of beasts to lie down in? Everyone that passes by her shall hiss and wag his head. Sound familiar? It's exactly what it says about Babylon. You say, why? Well, these are two different cities and two different nations. But if you understand history, Assyria was the world power before Babylon. Okay? And who was before that? Egypt. I don't think, when you're reading through Genesis and reading through Exodus, who do you think the world power was? It's obviously Egypt, okay? And then there's obviously other nations that are fighting against each other, but when you're dealing with, I'm talking about world power, like empires that are taking over just massive amounts of the countries. They pretty much rule over everybody. And Assyria was a huge kingdom that was ruling over a lot of people, and the only peace that they couldn't get was Jerusalem. And you know, the historians are just like, yeah, we don't really know why, but they just could not get Jerusalem for some reason. Well, we know why, because we believe the Bible, okay? And obviously God protected Judah from that, but when it came to the Babylonian Empire, their sins caught up to them, and God used the Babylonians to take them out. So I want you to see that similarity, because I think that really helps you understand that when you're dealing with the seven-headed dragon, you know, that city, that core is the same all the way down the line. It's just moving locations. That's why it says that she sitteth upon many waters. Okay? What did the waters represent in Revelation chapter 17? But nations, peoples, and tongues. Okay? That's what it says the waters represent. Because when you're dealing with this dragon, okay, in the end times, there's not literally going to be a dragon. Listen, Godzilla's not coming out of the ocean and terrorizing everything, okay? You know, it's not going to be that. It's not going to be the seven-headed dragon, and then Godzilla comes up and they fight, okay? It's all picturing something, okay? It's all picturing, it all represents something. And the seven heads represent seven kingdoms throughout time. The ten horns represent ten kingdoms that are in the last times, okay? They're like the ten toes that are on the image that Nebuchadnezzar sees in Daniel chapter 2. And so those ten kings are all there, okay? So those are all kingdoms all at once in the end times. But you're dealing with a final kingdom and a final world power is what you're dealing with. Okay, so that hasn't happened yet. We don't have a world power. You say, well, America's a world power. Kind of, but it's not like Rome was. It's not like Greece was. It's not like the Assyrians were. It's not a complete world power, and it will be eventually. But I want you to see that similarity because it is literally saying the same exact thing. It's talking about the city that sits carelessly saying, I am, and there is none beside me. That's exactly what Babylon said. And isn't it interesting that all those kingdoms fell? Right, if you look at history, right, five are fallen. Okay, in John's day, five are fallen. Nineveh thought the same thing. So, you know, basically, I shall not be a widow. I sit a queen and am no widow. And Babylon, the physical Babylon that Nebuchadnezzar ruled over and that Belshazzar ruled over, it is saying, I shall be a lady forever. I'll be a lady of the nations forever. And God's saying, you know, showing no. No, you're not, okay? Because if these nations, like in the past, fell, you will fall too. And listen, that seventh kingdom, that seventh head will be broken as well, okay? And you're like, well, it is going to be broken. It's going to raise again. Well, that eighth head is going to be broken, right? Because it talks about how he's of the seven, but he's the eighth. And obviously, that's talking about the Antichrist dying and raising again, okay? So you're dealing with the same person, but, you know, obviously, you're dealing with the Antichrist that's trying to be like the Lord Jesus Christ. Another thing that I see here is in verse 10. So in Isaiah 47, verse 10, and this just goes for our nation in general, you know. And by the way, I do believe that our nation as a whole isn't as wicked as what you see on TV. You know, I believe that they put out there all this, you know, just debauchery and wickedness. And they want you to believe that everybody's like that. And if you're any different, then you're just a weirdo, okay? No, they're pushing this to think, well, everybody's like this, and everybody's into debauchery, everybody's into lewdness, everybody's into fornication, everybody's into adultery, everybody's into all this wickedness that's going on. But it's just not true. But the idea here is that, you know, in Hollywood and the upper elites and all these wicked people that are ruling over us right now, you know, this is what they're like. In Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 20. Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 20. The idea that none seeth me, right? It's just like I'm doing all this stuff. No one's seeing this. No one can see what I'm doing. The idea that just no one is watching you and no one notices the sins that you're doing. And listen, the people that are in government right now, they are just openly just lying, openly doing things that are nefarious, and just they're just like, oh, nothing to see here, guys. I mean, one guy is sleeping with some Chinese spy, okay, some congressman. Openly, this isn't a secret. And it's just like nothing to see here, folks. Just the wickedness that goes on with our leaders and just no... And they're just like, no one sees this. I mean, that guy should be embarrassed to even talk to anybody anymore that's in public. But no, he's still a congressman, and he's still getting interviews on CNN and all this stuff, talking about how heinous Trump is when he's sleeping with some Chinese spy, right? And that's just the cusp of the wickedness that goes on. Listen, that's what we see, okay? What's done behind doors, and God forbid we'd ever know what's going on behind the doors, because it's a shame to even speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But Proverbs 30 and verse 20, notice what it says here. It says, such is the way of an adulterous woman. She eateth and wipeth her mouth and saith, I have done no wickedness. Right? And the idea that it's getting here is that it's kind of like you eat something that you shouldn't be eating, and it just wipes your mouth, and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do anything. I mean, that is what I see with our leaders today. It's disgusting. It's disgusting, and it's laughable that they think that they can say that and be like, oh, yeah, you're right. You're not doing anything bad. You know, just like we're just going to not see what you're doing. It's like the emperor's new clothes, right? You know the story about the emperor's new clothes where he's naked? And he's like, look at my new clothes, everybody. And everybody's just like, yeah, those are awesome. You know, and just like the elephant in the room, like no one wants to say, like, you're naked, okay? And anyway, so the idea here of no one seeing, and the thing is, the Bible talks about the fact that, you know, bread eaten in secret is sweet, but, you know, people like doing things in secret. They like doing things in the dark. They think no one sees them do it. But you know what? People, and by the way, psychopaths, okay, that do things in secret, that eventually doesn't give them enough pleasure. They want to do it openly because they want people to see them, okay? They want people to see what they do. And, you know, try to wrap your mind around a reprobate's mind because it wouldn't make any sense. But, you know, they're just trying to take it to the next level, right? Because it doesn't matter. The most wicked thing, it's just eventually they'll get desensitized to it and they got to do something even more wicked, okay? That's why they start off with men, okay? But then it goes down to children, goes down to animals, goes down to other wickedness, and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse till, you know, you get to Jeffrey Dahmer or something like that. And the idea here is that, you know, they want to do it in secret, but eventually it's just like open, you know? What are you going to do about it? And that's what our country's like today. The leaders are just pretty much like, yeah, I'm doing that. What are you going to do about it? Right? That's what's going on today. And, you know, eventually their shame is going to be brought before them. These wicked people that are in office today, their legs will be made bare and their nakedness will be shown and they will pay for their sins. Now, Isaiah chapter 39, notice what it says in verse 14. Isaiah 29 and verse 14. You see the similar thing where it's basically saying, no man seeth us. Isaiah 29, verse 14, it says, therefore, behold, I will proceed to do a marvelous work among this people, even a marvelous work and a wonder, for the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of the prudent men shall be hid. Woe unto them that seek deep to hide their counsel from the Lord, and their works are in the dark. And they say, who seeth us and who knoweth us? Okay. And just the idea that it's just like, yeah, we're hiding this from everybody. No one can see what we're doing. It's insulting to the intelligence to think that we don't know what they're doing. We don't know that they're lying. That's the worst part about it, you know, honestly. If they just came out and just said, yeah, we're doing this. What are you going to do about it? It's when they lie to you and be like, I'm doing this for you. It's like, give me a break. Think I'm an idiot? But there's plenty of idiots that will follow them, and there's plenty of idiots that say, yeah, that, you know, this person's doing it for us. Listen, most everybody in government's there for their own, you know, promotion, for their own self-good. They don't give a rip about you, okay? And I know there's some good people in there. I know there's some people that, you know, are wanting to try to make a difference and that joint, you know, got in there to try to make a difference, but you know, most people in there are psychopaths. Most people in there just want power. They want money, and they don't give a rip about you. They don't give a rip about me, and they'll do whatever it takes to get what they want, and then they just lie to us, and they think that we don't see it. That's what's funny about it, is they think that we don't see what they're doing, okay? Now, in Revelation chapter 18, go to Revelation chapter 18. Revelation chapter 18 and verse 4. So obviously Revelation 17 and 18 are dealing with Babylon. Revelation 17 is more telling you about who Babylon is. Revelation 18 is talking about the destruction of Babylon. Notice what it says here in verse 4. It says, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works, in the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her. Notice this, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow and shall see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord who judgeth her. Okay, so we see here that it's very clear that in one day, and you see the same thing said in Isaiah. Now we know that in 1 hour, it's going to be even more specific later on, that in 1 hour she's destroyed. Okay, and you think of Babylon, that, remember Babylon in the story with Daniel, when Daniel, the writing was on the wall and Daniel gave the interpretation. When Daniel gave the interpretation to Belshazzar, he said, tonight you're going to die. That's how fast it was. That night it was over. So it wasn't like this long drawn out thing where Babylon was being destroyed. And obviously God used the Medes and the Persians to basically take out Babylon. And we're going to see later on that God's going to use someone else to destroy Babylon even in the future. Okay. Now, Isaiah chapter 47, go back to Isaiah chapter 47 and verse 9. And another thing that's brought up here is witchcrafts and sorceries. Okay. And you say, that's just Harry Potter stuff. That's not even made. That's just made up. No, witchcrafts and sorceries are real things. Okay. And you're obviously dealing with devils, and you're dealing with spiritual wickedness that's going on with this. Okay. And so demonic forces are being used during this time. Okay. And so I want you to see what it says here in Isaiah 47. Notice in verse 9, it says, but these two things shall come to thee in a moment, in one day, the loss of children and widowhood. They shall come upon thee in their perfection for the multitude of thy sorceries and for the great abundance of thine enchantments. So it's stating why this is coming upon them. It says in verse 11, it says, therefore shall evil come upon thee, thou shalt not know from whence it riseth, and mischief shall fall upon thee, thou shalt not be able to put it off. And desolation shall come upon thee suddenly, which thou shalt not know. Stand now with thine enchantments, and with the multitude of thy sorceries, wherein thou hast labored from thy youth. If so be, thou shalt be able to profit. If so be, thou mayest prevail. Thou art wearied in the multitude of thy counsels. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators stand up and save thee from these things that shall come upon thee. So it's basically saying you've been using all this sorcery, you've been using all these astrologers and stargazers, and you know, use them now when all this destruction, see if they'll save you. And so he's basically, you know, talking about the fact that this is the reason it's all coming upon you. Now use that to see if that'll save you. Okay? Now, the Bible talks about how in Revelation chapter 18, how, you know, the same thing applies in the future, okay? Go to Revelation 18 and verse 23, because you say, well, we're in the New Testament, there's no sorcery or witchcraft going on. That's like saying there's no more demon possessions, even though Paul had to deal with that with, you know, the seven sons of Sceva, you know, like the idea of those, that they were like torn by these familiar spirits, or, you know, these unclean spirits. So, there's still devil possessions going on out there. There's still, you know, evil spirits that are out there as far as, you know, the fallen angels and all that stuff. You say, well, what's, you know, we know what astrologers are, stargazers, you could probably figure that out, right? So you're dealing with people that are like looking up in the stars and trying to observe times and all that. Monthly prognosticators. I always remember this from Groundhog's Day, you know, the Bill Murray movie, and they're like, bringing out Phil, and they're like giving this whole speech, and it says the prognosticator of prognosticators, you know. And I remember when I saw that when I was younger, I was like, what in the world does prognosticate even mean? But it's basically just telling the future, right? It's basically like telling what's going to happen in the future. And obviously, we don't believe a stupid groundhog is going to actually tell you how much longer the winter is going to be or anything like that. But they're saying he's a prognosticator in the fact that he's going to say, he's going to see a shadow or not see a shadow, and that's going to tell you how short or how long the winter is going to be. Okay, so that's how I remember it. Now, you may have just looked it up in a dictionary and you're like, that's how I know what prognosticator means. So that's what you're dealing with there. The people that are basically trying to tell the future, okay? And there's a lot that could go into that. You think of the people that have, like, the tarot cards and do they still have the people that use the, like, what is that thing called? The crystal ball thing, you know? I don't know. But that's what it's basically talking about. People like, you know, come see your future and, like, basically calling up demons to do that, okay? Go to Revelation chapter 18, verse 23. It says in verse 23, it says, "And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee, and the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy merchants were great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth." Okay, so it's talking about by thy sorceries were all the nations deceived. And that's a strong statement, but you think about this, and I was talking with some of my pastor friends last night. We were just talking about end time stuff, and just thinking about like how is there going to be this man that everybody's going to be behind, right? Because you think about how polarized everybody is, right? As far as even in America today, how polarized people are. And a lot of times there's no logic behind it in some cases where people are just like, hate this one person or love this person or whatever the case may be. But you say, well, how will they all, you know, basically unite? And I believe there's going to be sorceries that are going to be going on, witchcrafts and sorceries that are going to be bewitching people to follow this guy, okay? Now, obviously, there's going to be the false prophet that's going to come, and he's going to basically do signs and wonders, and he's going to basically be pointing everybody to worship the beast, okay, and give power unto him and obey him. So I think there's going to be multiple things that are going on there. But if you remember, the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet, in Revelation 16, talks about how out of their mouth come frogs, and the frogs are devils, okay? And so the idea is that obviously the beast and the false prophet are devil possessed, okay? But I do believe there's just going to be demonic forces that are going to be pushing people to, you know, be disillusioned. And obviously God's going to send strong delusion when we're taken out of this world, and when Jesus comes in the clouds, he's going to put strong delusion on those that didn't believe, okay? But at the same time, you know, even when we're here, there's going to be this strong push, and I believe sorceries and witchcrafts are going to be, and you say, you know, why do you believe? Because that's what it says, okay? In Revelation chapter 18, it says by sorceries. I believe it's by sorceries. I don't believe that that's just like spiritualizing it. I believe there's actually going to be sorcery that's going to be used. There's going to be demonic forces that are going to try to get people to back somebody or back this one world order, because I don't think it's going to just happen outside of that, okay? Because there's just too much differences in the world to unite everybody. I think there's going to be demonic forces that are going to be at work that are going to do that, sorceries that are going to be doing that. And I believe Babylon, that great whore, is going to be doing that with her sorceries. That's going to be bringing these nations together, okay? Now go to Deuteronomy chapter 18, because let's just talk about sorcerers for a second and what the Bible teaches about that, okay? And it's not good. So in verse 9 there, Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 9, it says, "When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you any one that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire." So that should be pretty obvious, right? You don't sacrifice your children. Okay, so he leads off with that one. Don't do that. And then it says, "Or that uses divination." Now, you say, well, why does he lead with that? Because I believe a lot of this stuff leads into all of that. When you're worshiping Molech and doing all this stuff, a lot of times divination is being involved. You think of Balaam, the son of Beor, right? He did enchantments and all this stuff when they were worshiping Baal. That enchantments and observers of times, all this stuff is going on. and the superstitions and all that stuff to where that you end up sacrificing your children in the end, okay? But it says that use a divination, an observer of times, an enchanter or a witch or a charmer or a consulter with familiar spirits or a wizard or a necromancer. You know, what are all these? Now, I mean, pretty much a lot of these you can see what it's dealing with. Like observer of times, you can think of like astrologers and stuff like that. They're observing the times. And that what are all the blood moons? And, you know, when these all these moons or all the planets are aligned in this, and it's just observing times, okay? You know what we're supposed to look for? The abomination of desolation. That's what we're supposed to be looking for. When you see the abomination of desolation, you know, stand where it ought not, and you see the son of perdition, you know, sitting in the temple of God saying that he's God, that's what you should be observing. Not like, okay, you know, we're having an eclipse over here, and we're having a blood moon over here. Now, when you see the sun darkened and the moon turned into blood, and the stars from heaven all fall, okay, observe that and know that Jesus is about to come in the clouds, okay? But you're not going to really need to get out a map and try to map this stuff out, because it's going to be like that. That Jesus is going to be coming like lightning through, you know, into the front in the clouds. Now, a charmer, you know, I always think of the snake charmers, you know, but I'm sure there's other things that are going on with that. Consulter of familiar spirits, pretty self-explanatory. Wizards, necromancers. Necromancers are people that talk to the dead. Okay, you know, this one's easy if anybody, you know, in here is still studying Greek. But necros means dead. Okay, it means people that are dead. Okay, so you can see necromancer, necromancy is dealing with dead people, okay? Now, when you're dealing with necromancy, you got to understand this. I do not believe that people are talking to people in hell, okay? Actually, the only place in the Bible where you deal with someone that was dead, you know, like when you think about someone talking to someone that was dead, was like Samuel and the witch at Endor, right? And that was a saved person, though. And the only time you see people coming back from the dead and like walking around, like in the case when Jesus was resurrected from the dead, there was actually bodies of the saints that came up out of the graves and walked into Jerusalem. You know, that it was bodies of the saints, though, okay, saved people that came back from the dead, not, you know, people that are in hell. And so all these people, you know, when, you know, people are trying to talk to the dead. They go into haunted houses. They try to talk to the dead. They go to other places. They try to talk to the dead. The only people you're going to talk to are devils, okay? Because the people, most of those people that you're trying to talk to are in hell, and you're not going to be talking to them, okay? So when it says necromancy, it's not saying, like, yes, you can talk to the dead, okay? It's just saying that people that think they're talking to the dead, right? It's just like the people that said, Lord, Lord, will we not cast out devils in your name? Right? Does that mean they actually cast out devils? No, they thought they did. Okay? That doesn't mean they actually did. So, anyway, all that to say is that these are abominations that the Lord drove them out for. And he's obviously saying, you know, when you go into the land, don't be like them. Don't do these things. Don't be witches. Don't be wizards. Don't be these charmers or necromancers or dealing with familiar spirits. Actually, the Bible puts the death penalty on that. It says, I suffer not a witch to live. Okay, so this is not something that we should be taking light of or anything like that. Now go to Isaiah chapter 47, and we'll be finishing up the chapter here. And so we see the destruction when it comes to Babylon. So at this point, he's basically stating, hey, I'm going to make you ashamed. I'm going to make you desolate. And then it's going to state pretty much how he does it in verse 14. It says, behold, they shall be as stubble. The fire shall burn them. They shall not deliver themselves from the power of the flame. There shall not be a coal to warm at, nor fire to sit before it. Thus shall they be unto thee with whom thou hast labored, even thy merchants from thy youth. They shall wander every one to his quarter. None shall save thee. Now, obviously, it's talking about them being destroyed by fire, right? No one's going to deliver them from the power of the flame. Go to Jeremiah chapter 50. So I want to first show you the physical kingdom of Babylon and how it was destroyed, and then I'm going to show you what it says in Revelation, and then we'll be done. So meaning that, you know, the finale is that these cities are burned down with fire, okay? Now, did God destroy Babylon with like fire and brimstone like Sodom? No, the Bible talks about how he used the Medes and the Persians to take out Babylon, okay? And they burned it down with fire, right? They destroyed it. And notice what it says in verse 32. It says, so Jeremiah 50, verse 32, it says, "And the most proud shall stumble and fall, and none shall raise him up. I will kindle a fire in his cities, and it shall devour all round about." Now, God is obviously the one doing it in the sense that he's the one that's pushing, you know, this kingdom to do it, okay? Just as much as he's the one that judged Judah and Jerusalem, but he wasn't physically down there doing the actions. Does that make sense? He was using Nebuchadnezzar, he was using Babylon to do that. And the same thing here is that he's using another nation to come in and destroy Babylon. Notice, go to Jeremiah chapter 51 and verse 57. Jeremiah 51 and verse 57, it says, "And I will make drunk her princes and her wise men, her captains and her rulers and her mighty men, and they shall sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake, saith the king." And I believe that's pretty much saying they're going to be dead. Okay, if you're sleeping a perpetual sleep, you know what perpetual means? So I love how it says that, right? It's just like they're going to sleep a perpetual sleep. And by the way, they're not going to wake up, right? Seth the king. Now, the king is obviously talking about the Lord of hosts. Seth the king, whose name is the Lord of hosts. "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the broad walls of Babylon shall be utterly broken, and her high gates shall be burned with fire, and the people shall labor in vain, and the folk in the fire, and they shall be weary." Okay, so it's describing the destruction of the physical Babylon that was destroyed thousands of years ago. And go to Revelation chapter 17. Revelation chapter 17. And so actually, and you may not have realized this, maybe you have, okay? Because when you're dealing with Revelation, you're dealing with all these vials and trumpets, right? That's God pouring out all this judgment, right? Stuff coming down from the heavens, you know, like just stuff, crazy stuff's going on. He's sending out these locusts out of hell. You know, there's this army of 200 million that are on horses that have the faces of lions. They have tails of serpents. You know, just crazy stuff that's going on. And I don't believe that's figurative, by the way, okay? I believe there will literally be horses with the faces of lions and tails with serpents on them. And obviously the locusts are locusts, and it describes them to have like hair like women and like teeth like lions and stuff like that. Obviously it's describing it, giving it a descriptive power there, but that being said, it's like you see all this stuff and you're like, you know, God's doing all this. Like, he's not using other people, he's using his own forces, he's using all his wonders, right? But then you get to Babylon, and he actually has this special judgment that he puts against them. It's actually not him directly just like throwing fire down on it, okay? Notice what it says here in Revelation chapter 17 and verse 16. It's actually very similar to what he does with all these other nations. You know, you think of Assyria, it's taken out by Babylon. You think of Babylon, it's taken out by the Medes, you know, and then you even get into the Medo-Persians that are taken out by the Grecians. And just the idea is that these kingdoms are eating each other, okay? Notice what it says here in Revelation chapter 17 and verse 16. It says, "And the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore." Now, earlier in the chapter, it says these 10 horns are 10 kings. And they give the power unto the beast, right? Okay? And so they're given power for like an hour, I believe it says. And then they give all their power to the beast, okay, to basically have this world kingdom. But it says that these kings are going to hate the whore. Okay, the city, right? The whore that's seated on the beast. Okay, and it says, "And shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire." Okay, so how is Babylon being destroyed? It's being destroyed by these 10 kingdoms. Okay, notice what it says in verse 17. "For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree, and to give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled, and the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth." Okay, now go to Revelation chapter 18, and I'll show you where it's actually burning down. But you don't really see, it's not like God sends fire down from heaven, right? It doesn't say that, but it does say that it's going to be burned up. okay, and that her judgment is given, and that the Lord is the one that judges her, okay? We already saw that earlier where it talks about the Lord judging the whore in Revelation. And so it's not that God's not doing it in the fact that obviously he put it into their hearts to do it. He's basically having them do that, but they're basically eating each other. So even at the very end, even after God's pouring out all this judgment where he's physically the one doing all this stuff, he's like, all right, I need these 10 kings. These 10 kingdoms are going to go destroy the whore. Okay. And in Revelation chapter 18, verse 8, it says, therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord who judgeth her. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. You say, well, what are the kings of the earth? Well, there's other kings besides the 10 kings, okay? There's like the 10 major ones, okay? And you're like, who are those people? Or who are those kingdoms? I don't know. Okay, so, you know, obviously it's going to be 10 powerful kingdoms to where if they're the ones giving the power, okay, it's not Lithuania, okay? It's not Sweden. It's not Switzerland. Can I at least rule those out? So, but obviously you have big major powers, right? You think of China. You think of Russia. You think of even the UK still, right? Germany, different places where you would say these are major powers, right? So anyway, you know, this chapter is just really dealing with that, but I wanted you to see all those parallels, all that stuff that's where you see in Jeremiah, where you had the physical Babylon, and Revelation, where you had the future Babylon, and then, you know, how Nineveh was technically a Babylon. And if I get that across to you, to understand this seven-headed dragon is that each kingdom was a Babylon. Okay, and what is a Babylon? But going all the way back to the Tower of Babel. And what's the idea? The idea is we want to build this tower lest we be divided, right? And what did God do? He divided them. He gave them all different languages to where they had to go divide from each other. And so what are you dealing with? You're dealing with everybody coming together, having the same nation, the same religion, the same language, everything, right? And that's the thought process or the spirit of the Tower of Babel. And Babylon is going down the line. Even King Cyrus was called the king of Babylon. Okay? And he was the king of Persia. But he was called the king of Babylon. In 1 Peter, it talks about saluting those that are at the church in Babylon. Okay? 1 Peter chapter 5. Now, Babylon, the physical Babylon in the Chaldeans, was non-existent at that time. Who do you think he was talking about? I personally believe he's talking about the church that was in Rome. Okay? Because Rome was Babylon of that day. Okay? Now, I can't all, you know, like dogmatically show you that that's definitely, you know, that church he's talking about was in Rome. But to me, I don't believe it was the ruins of the Babylonian city. It was destroyed like 1,000 years before that. Okay? Or whatever it was, you know, maybe not 1,000 years. But 1,000 years from, you know, definitely thousands of years from where we're at right now. But anyway, you know, this is a great chapter to show you that. And it really, if you look at chapter 46 to 47, these are coupled together. You'll see everything that's going together in that when you're dealing with this. So let's end with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for today. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the book of Isaiah and just all the scriptures and just how everything lines up, everything fits together. And Lord, just pray to you to help us to understand these passages, mostly, Lord, that we can use them in our walk with you and that we don't just have knowledge, but that we actually use the knowledge that we have. And Lord, just pray to you be with us throughout this week. Pray to you be with those that are pregnant. Pray to you be with my wife particularly. And Lord, just pray that you to be with us as we go back to work. Lord, we love you. Pray also in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.